Earth, sky.
A new way of thinking is required. I have a very optimistic sense of at least the chance of a fairly smooth ride past this mid-century peak that we're facing. And the question we have to examine, which comes first, peak everything or peak us? In other words, can we kind of manage our way through to a new relationship with the planet, or are we going to have that change in our trajectory imposed upon us by limits?
You are listening to journalist and author Andrew Revkin, who writes the Dot Earth blog for the New York Times, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. By the end of the year 2011, the number of people on Earth is expected to reach 7 billion. That's getting close to twice as many people as there were in 1970, which, by the way, was the year of the first Earth Day. Andrew Revkin spoke more about our human population, energy, and Earth Day 2011 with Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar.
What are your thoughts on Earth Day in 2011, a year we're likely to see 7 billion people on the planet?
Well, you know, it really is kind of the best of times and the worst of times at the same time. The overarching trajectories for human affairs right now are, despite the recent turbulence, pretty good. There's fewer children dying prematurely of avoidable disease. There's longer lifespans. There's a reasonable amount of biodiversity still left to lose, which, you know, is both good and bad. But again, on things that on a number of fronts that matter, it's pretty clear that science has delineated we're sort of approaching the edge of the petri dish, as if you looked at us like bacteria that have been plunked down on this Earth. We've been growing at a blazing pace, and now there really are signs of fundamental limits on things, including the capacity of the atmosphere and ecosystems in the oceans to absorb greenhouse gases. And there are biological systems that are hurting.
This relates to something that you've written about, a lot about, which is energy and energy quest for the right kind of energy. Earth Day was inspired in part by a response to a 1969 oil spill in California. And now looking forward 40 years with the Gulf of Oil spill in 2010, partial meltdown of the Fukushima nuclear power plant just a month ago, has much changed in terms of looking at these fundamental issues of energy and the environment?
Well, the thing that the common element in looking at those particular environmental and energy calamities was not taking seriously the prospect of these kind of really serious kinds of problems. Now, if you find ways to mediate that risk, then you can probably move forward with some of these options. That again, the questions there are, what do we need? How much energy can we avoid through behavior change, lifestyle change, versus how much are we just fundamentally going to need as we head again toward having 2 billion or 3 billion more people all seeking decent lives? Now, again, if we were all vegan monks, this wouldn't be such an issue, but we're not. And there's very little sign of the sort of burgeoning global middle class wanting to give up some of the modern conveniences.
What does that mean? What do you mean by that we're not all vegan monks? Explain that for us.
Well, we're not. We have high appetites. As people get less poor and then get a little more wealthy, moving through middle class, the amount of protein they eat, the amount of meat they eat goes up, and it's usually working your way up the food chain toward the most energy-intense, water-intense, land-intense sources of food, beef or bluefin tuna at the top of the ocean chain. And that's unfortunate because as everyone kind of moves toward more of that middle-class zone, then you really do get a sense that something has to give. And there are even some sort of resource optimists. Vaclav Smil at the University of Manitoba, who's kind of one of the Yodas of this field, one of the absolute go-to people, says that in the end he sees even the wealthy having modulated diets away from this habit of eating whatever we can eat just because we can afford it.
I wanted to come back to this question of population and how that is impacting the environment, and that there are nearly twice as many people on the planet today as there were on the first Earth Day in 1970. What do you think this means for the environment, the natural systems that not only support us, but the millions of other species that we share the planet with?
the difference between then and now is that the population problems around the world are like a hugely uneven map. Looking at energy and particularly climate, the IEA, the International Energy Agency, said 98% of the growth in greenhouse gas emissions is coming in developing countries in the next 30 years. So mostly China and India. There is population growth here, too, while many industrialized countries are shrinking, like Japan. The United States is an outlier. We're going to go toward 400 million or more Americans in just another couple of generations, from 300 or so now, mostly through immigration. And when someone either moves here or is born here, they have a much higher energy footprint than someone born in Haiti or Bangladesh.
Okay, this year, 2011, Earth will see 7 billion people, and we're on path to 9 billion people. What is important? What is something that you really want people to think about this?
A new way of thinking is required. If you look at an issue like energy, and you're just kind of always pointing at someone like Exxon or a politician, then you're missing the reality that we all need energy, and there aren't options. And so if we want to really get busy and move off of the fossil fuels of previous centuries and could go to something new and sustainable and renewable, then we have to take on that responsibility and get busy. And I see it as a very positive prospect that we are so disinvested in things like basic research and development and energy, but that it makes it really simple and easy and cheap to greatly increase that. For example, a 2-cent nudge in the gas tax would triple our R&D for energy sciences. I have a very optimistic sense of at least the chance of a fairly smooth ride toward and past this mid-century peak that we're facing. Which comes first, peak everything or peak us? In other words, can we kind of manage our way through a soft landing, a soft transition to a new relationship with the planet, or are we going to have that change in our trajectory imposed upon us by limits? That's kind of a function of how busy we want to be.
What's the most important thing you want people today to know about Earth Day in a year of 7 billion people?
That there's every chance of the next 30-year period being one of great innovation and collaboration around the world. And it just takes a little bit of focus to get you engaged in that kind of the conversations and the actions that would be needed to have the brighter outcome.
You've been listening to Andrew Revkin, who writes the .Earth blog for the New York Times and is a senior fellow at the Pace Academy for Applied Environmental Studies at Pace University in New York. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.